And Slavens looks at ball one low. The 1-0 is hit in the air to center field. That's pretty well hit. Bench on his horse. Bench to the track. Bench looking up. It is gone! A home run to dead center field at Charles Schwab Field. We have seen the impossible. A bomb to dead center and a 2-1 Arkansas lead.
That's Kevin Kugler last night. The impossible has happened. A home run to dead center field at the College World Series. Shocking, shocking stuff. Two other people. Rob Anderson had the stat last night. Robert Anderson, a fantastic follow, by the way, during this College World Series. So two other people in the history of that park have hit a home run to dead center, basically in the area that houses the batter's eye.
The impossible!
Yes, the impossible has happened. Brady Slavens joins Pete Alonso and Dylan Busby. 436-foot home run.
The impossible!
And then our friends at the on the Creighton Analytics team, 107-mile-an-hour exit velocity, 24 degrees, launch angle, 436 feet. Wind was a little bit different. I mean, the first 3 or 4 days of the series, the wind was basically blowing straight in from center field, and watching it from all the angles of the ballpark, like, it would get up there, and then it would look as if it's sort of hit a wall and dropped straight back down. That was not the case last night, and it should be a little cooler evening tonight, and it should be a lot of fun between Arkansas and Ole Miss.
Impossible!
A couple people tweeted this at us here at Happer Show, and you could do so at Happer Show, at Connor Happer, throughout our 2 hours today, or really anytime, anywhere. How about this from our friend Kendall Rogers, who joined the show yesterday? Northern Colorado will hire former Nebraska baseball coach Mike Anderson as its next head coach, according to Kendall. Anderson recently spent time as the state director for prep baseball, and he played, of course, at Northern Colorado. So Mike Anderson, last coached at Nebraska in 2011. That was the last time he was a head coach in college baseball. Then he went to coach high school for a couple of years. And then he was an assistant at Oklahoma for a few years as well. Now Mike Anderson taking another crack at Division I baseball. So that's from Kendall Rogers. There is a familiar name, I suppose, in Nebraska baseball history. Goes and it is still, maybe this will reignite the series. Doubtful, but very, very doubtful, by the way. Making a joke, by the way. Maybe this reignites the series between Nebraska and Northern Colorado that happens in early March, and it usually snows or something like that. Something ridiculous. No, I don't
think. Impossible!
Yeah, that would be it. Right.
Hey, by the way, what are the exact conditions to get us that moment? I mean, with the wind, I mean, because you know it's kind of a stadium thing. It's kind
what
of
moment?
A,
the impossible!
A home run to dead center?
Home run dead center that far, and it's only happened 3 times. So what are the ideal conditions to get us that?
Well, it can't be quite as humid.
Okay.
And that's tapered off over the last couple of days. So
okay.
You want less humidity. But this is more of a science lesson, I think, than a baseball lesson, but it sort of, the worlds sort of collide here. So I think you want less humidity. You want the air to be less dense.
Okay.
Right? Does that make sense?
Less thick?
Less thick. And then, I mean, like I said, for the first couple of days of the series, the wind was blowing straight in out of center field. So that's coming in from, like, the southeast. So if you can get a wind that pushes out the other way, which you rarely get at that ballpark this time of year, although it was the case a couple nights ago where it was kind of blowing out to center field. So the wind was coming in from the north a little bit and maybe in from the west.
Okay.
As well. I mean, that's what you need. Little wind aid and the ball's flying really well.
The impossible.
And then the impossible will happen.
Could we have that today?
And you get a very good hitter. I'm not sure what it looks like down there today. Assuming, because it's supposed to, there's some storms that are sort of rolling in. And there's some cool air coming in. Maybe the wind will be coming from the north a little bit more today. Maybe we can get more impossible.
That'd be nice.
The impossible has
the
happened.
Impossible.
Love that. So yes, that was some fun last night. All right, let's get into a few different things here. First of all, let's give a quick shout out to our friends at Union Omaha, who's run in the tournament. The U.S. Open Cup came to an end last night, quite abruptly, really, and a loss to Sporting Kansas City. But as I said a few years ago, it was 6-0, I believe, was the final, or 6-0, I guess, as they say in soccer. I want the soccer people to be angry at me. I'm new with this. I'm no Josh Peterson, pretending to be a soccer guy. But they lose 6-0 last night, but it didn't really matter. They made it all the way to the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open Cup. They were one of two non-MLS teams to get to that point. They beat two MLS teams on their way to doing so in their houses in Chicago and Minnesota. And then what you saw last night was really the culmination of the last couple months, which is let's all, you know, if you're a diehard Union Omaha fan or if you have really taken a liking to the team or maybe if you're new, hey, why not? Let's pack in the car. Let's drive down I-29. Let's wear neon green, and we'll go down the road and root for Union Omaha in Sporting KC Stadium. Those two clubs sort of view each other as big brother, little brother type of thing, and not like in the sports rivalry way we usually talk about them. Like it's literally, you know, a brotherly relationship where they don't have to sort of, you know, interact with each other all that much. I would say that there is a lot of overlap likely in the fan bases where if you are a soccer fan and you live in Omaha, hey, we got a soccer team here. That's really cool. But also Kansas City is the nearest team. And maybe you have your European League team as well. But to get down there, play on that stage last night, I think that makes it all worth it. And now, guess what? Now this is not, and we'll talk to people down the road about this. People like Marty Cordero, who could certainly speak to it. This is something for a team like that that will you'll feel this for a long time. Is it unlikely that Union Omaha could make another run like that? Yes. But getting people to buy the merchandise, getting people, I mean, the brand sort of awareness of it, really, in a town like this that is known for baseball and that they play sort of in a baseball field but with a growing soccer community, I think that's something that you're going to feel in that franchise for a long time. I mean, you know, the Storm Chasers won a lot in their first couple of years at Warner Park with those young group of Royals guys that came up. And not that the Storm Chasers needed any sort of like awareness or anything like that, because we had known about the Omaha Royals for a really long time. But guess what? People started going out to the ballpark and people started, you know, buying the merchandise and getting more, you know, acquainted with Warner Park. I mean, that's lasted a really, really long time. So What are the key points to building a franchise and starting it early, you know, or starting that fan base and getting it going early? It's winning right out of the gate. Look at the Las Vegas Knights, right? I mean, Vegas gets a hockey team, and yeah, that's really exciting, but they're really good. Really good right off the bat. And now all of a sudden it's kind of a Knights town in Vegas. That would happen, I think, for the Raiders if they were able to actually win some football games, Shane.
How awesome would that be? I mean, would that not be a sweet town if it was silver and black?
Absolutely. And all you got to do to kickstart that, win.
Just win, baby. You know, back in the day, there used to be silver towns. Why can't the Las Vegas be a silver town now?
Sure can. Wait till they get the Oakland A's, and then it'll be green.
Oh, jeez. Leave that stadium where it's at. Bring the A's. That'd probably be fine.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon. Or they get LeBron's basketball team that he wants to own. That's going to happen in Vegas at some point soon as well.
Is Vegas that big of a city? I mean, they have...
It's not.
It's not big enough for three pro teams.
I don't know.
In the Raiders, they have another team there, like a smaller minor league team. I forget which one it is, but
it's such a weird. They have a minor league baseball team as well. It's such a weird sell because there's obviously Vegas locals and plenty of them, but I do feel like part of the sell is, hey, we have consistently the most tourists out of, you know, any city this size that exists.
And what time of the year is the tourism biggest there?
Is it all year long? It's all the time.
Okay.
And it's every weekend there's something going on.
Maybe baseball work then.
I don't know. I would say probably the busy season is late spring.
Okay.
You know, like March, April, May. You know, when the weather is, or maybe even at the beginning of the year when the weather is a little bit cooler up north and people sort of migrate down and they want to find somewhere warm or something like that. But I feel like, you know, in that town, you could sort of market to, hey, come on out. There's plenty of room. They might not have enough people in that town to say, we're going to get 25,000 a night.
Well, that's
a baseball team.
That's the great thing about that town. There's plenty of space to build.
You've got
a whole crap load of desert out there.
There's just desert.
You can build wherever.
There's desert, and there's always people there. So I think this is, I mean, obviously we've seen two teams move there already, and you might see the other two pro sports move there. Anyway, off of that, that's how you start it, man. You start early by winning, and that's how you build your fan base and go off of that. Saw a few tweets. Good friend, the college football professor. He's joining the station a couple times. He was tweeting out this morning, and yes, we are full all the way into college football sort of like watch list / magazines. The analytics people are diving into these things. So he was tweeting out this morning the percentage chances of 6 wins and the percentage chances of 10-plus wins, according to his metrics that he has. So here is the here's a few notables. Chances at 6 wins for Nebraska, 74%. 74% chance to win 6 games, at least 6 games for Nebraska, and a 10% chance, which feels like a lot, a 10% chance to win 10-plus games for Nebraska. You compare that to some of the other teams around them in the division, Minnesota, slightly under that in both respects.
Yeah,
that's right. Minnesota, 72.1% chance to win 6 games, 9.5% chance to win 10. Iowa, 98.5% chance to win 6. Yeah, Josh and I were talking about this yesterday. That's been a little bit of a different program over the last handful of years here, where when they were down, you used to say, well, if they could have a down year, and that really could end up being a 4-8 and 5-7. I think they're sort of past that from the base level of their program now. So you could pretty much pencil them in for at least 6 every year, and a 62% chance to win 10 games for them. For Wisconsin, 98.1% chance to win 6 and a 50% chance to win 10. So clearly the numbers, the analytics that he has, that Adam has, McClintock, has put together, would say that Wisconsin and Iowa have the best chance to sort of pile up wins in the division. But Nebraska, Minnesota, Purdue, all right in the same range as it pertains to those two categories of things here. That's going to be an that's the way it's sort of setting up. So when you'll see this sort of reflected in your preseason picks this year, you know, when they go to pick the division, the media does. What you'll probably see is Wisconsin and Iowa at the top. And then how the next three teams go after that is really, I think, going to be a kind of a crapshoot. Nebraska, Minnesota, Purdue. I think you could probably put them in any order. They both have obviously major flaws and things to sort of worry about going into their next season, but they also have, you know, some good things on their side as well. There's some buzz about Nebraska. I know we don't like to hear it. There is some good buzz about Nebraska. What does that all mean in the preseason? A whole lot of nothing. It doesn't mean much of anything. But Nebraska, Purdue, Minnesota is sort of the way it's setting up in the Big Ten West for whoever sort of emerges victorious out of that group. Who, like, okay, how about this? And you can call, text on the show, 402-951-1620. You can tweet at Happer Show. Connor Happer, Shane Schillberg with you here for the next 90 or so minutes.
Dodgy?
Yep. What did he say?
Dodgy?
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 Shane's still pressing buttons randomly over
there. I remember that drop. That's from Schick and Nick. I'm not for sure what he was talking about, but he definitely said dodgy.
Dodgy?
Dodgy. If I were to tell you that there is a 9-win team in that group, in the Purdue, Minnesota, Nebraska group, would you believe me?
Nope.
Okay. Because I think it's possible that there is. Now, here's the thing.
No, that's your opinion.
Are you going to have two 10-win teams at the top and then a 9-win team coming after that? Some of that is going to come down to the non-conference scheduling. Nebraska has what sort of, most would think is a loss in their non-conference schedule, given that they play Oklahoma. I don't think Purdue has many tough games in the non-con. At least they usually don't. I don't know their schedule off the top of my head. But is there an 8- or 9-win team in that group? And then for the other two, are they 6 wins-ish, or are they less than that? And I think that's sort of how the Big Ten West, is slotted out. It's not breaking news or anything like that. Look, I think Iowa and Wisconsin are probably the top couple teams in the division right now, and then it's a fight to sort of be knocking on that door. Now, keep this in mind. Not that Iowa and Wisconsin are unbeatable, because we know that to be the case. They're not. Could they lose to any of the teams in the group below them? Yeah, they could. But it's kind of about how the schedule turns out for you. And then, I mean, of course, from Nebraska's standpoint, it's hard for me to convince people of a world where they win 9 or so games. I can't even convince myself of that, really. But I'm telling you that there's a reason why those three are kind of grouped up together. It's because it's unclear about who is going to emerge from it. And everybody thinks somebody's going to emerge from it.
Cody.
I've heard good things about Purdue in the offseason. Can they continue off of their season that they had last year? And then Minnesota. Pretty consistent program.
I thought, whoa.
All right, so thoughts on that. We'll take them, 402-951-1620. You can email, by the way, into the show as well, Connor, at 1620thezone.com. Oh, let's see.
I like it. It's fun.
I did read this yesterday from Tom Fornelli. He was talking about Nebraska, and it actually made it about a couple days ago. They were picking each of the teams in the Big Ten's over-unders. So Nebraska's at 7.5. And part of the analysis from Fornelli was, honestly, I don't know what anybody's seen for Nebraska over the last 8 years that would make them that optimistic about anything, which is sort of funny. Just, can the greatest 3-9 team of all time improve to 8-4 in 2022, considering Nebraska played like a 6-6 team last year? It technically wouldn't be that large of a leap, but I'm not going to bet on it. Honestly, I don't know what anybody has seen for Nebraska over the last 8 years that would make them optimistic about anything. However, I think we will see a rebound from a lot of the horrific breaks this team suffered last year. The greatest 3-9 team of all time will be perfectly mediocre at 6-6. It might not get them to 7-5, but betting on 8-4 feels like foolish.
60% of the time, that's, it works every time.
That's the weirdest part about that 7 and exactly, Shane. That's the weirdest part about that 7.5 number, because I think if you set it at 6.5, you'd really be giving Nebraska fans something to think about.
Okay, that's fine.
Exactly. So, it's hard for me to, it's harder for people to say eight. It's weird because in my mind, seven and eight aren't that different, but it would feel a lot different.
Yeah.
Going into this year. But, I mean, those are both toward the top end, I think, of what Nebraska is going to be able to sort of put together. And we talked about this yesterday, you know, comparing Nebraska to Iowa as a program. The whole thing about the big breaks, I just have a hard time doing that anymore. I think we've done it a lot over the last decade, basically. Oh, man, I really like Nebraska on the periphery because they had bad turnover luck last year. And when you look at things at the end of the year and you take them in bulk stats and you say, oh, wow, Nebraska was like, they were kind of a good team on paper. They outgained their opponents. They're really good in these bulk areas. And then they were minus 10 in the turnover category. That's bound to flip. That's bound to change. The schedule's changed. And here's the thing for Nebraska. It just hasn't. Nebraska's been bit by it, you know, every year since I can remember, basically sans 2016 when they were positive, and guess what? It ended up positive for them. They won nine games with a team that was barely sort of scraping by. I can't expect Nebraska to be that, even though usually these are numbers that sort of flip on a yearly basis. Take the same thing with Iowa, but the other way. Iowa's always really good there. They're always, every single year, a candidate for regression because of that, and they don't. Because they're always good on the edges. I said it yesterday. Iowa was outgained, kind of significantly, on their season and won 10 games. Nebraska's the exact opposite of that. They outgain their opponents. They're pretty good at the main things that you worry about when trying to win football games. How many yards do you get? But they cannot put it together on the special team side of thing and things. Wow. And the turnovers as well. So maybe this is the year they do it. And if this is the year, that's where people are anticipating sort of the big jump coming from. But I can't plan on it until I actually see it. All right, thoughts on that? 951-1620. We'll come back. Connor Happer, Shane Schillerberg with you. I'm back in a couple minutes. Jacob Padilla coming up at 11. More up next on 1620 The Zone.